Craig Heidrich, and I am thrilled to be a member of this congregation. First of all, a little shout out to Caitlin. Incredible job, honey. I mean, you did great, and I hate being up here. I'm not joking. You want to come up? Okay. So I'm going to be speaking about something today, if I can find my mark in my Bible. And you can beam the first one up. Okay. Today I'm going to talk about Matthew 6. Okay, but first of all, I want you to take a look at a picture. So, some people are going to say it's half full. Some people are going to say it's half empty. Some people are going to say, why are you showing me a glass of water? Okay. You know, what we see and how we interpret what we see is really important. Okay. Now, this seems rather mundane and routine, but I have a better example for you. I don't know where I heard this story. I heard it a long, long time ago, and it's fictitious, but it serves the point. Okay, so let's say around 1900, 1920, there are a couple of manufacturers of shoes in Europe, and they decide they want to expand their market. They're trying to figure out what a really good market would be. So both companies send their two best sales agents to Africa. After a couple of weeks, the first one sends a message back to his home office. It looks really grave. Nobody wears shoes. The second guy sends a message almost exactly the same. He goes, the possibilities are endless. No one wears shoes. But that's just to make a point about how you can take a look at the same data set and see it from two sides. They said the exact same thing. What they meant were polar opposites. So this takes us to Matthew 6. I was reading through this a couple of years ago, and I saw something that I'd never seen before. Oh, okay. There we go. So, I was reading this. In Matthew 6, it says, the eye is the lamp of your body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be filled with light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be filled with darkness. And if the light within you is darkness, how great that darkness is. The word for eye is actually, the Hebrew word for eye is actually ayin, 16th or 17th letter in the Hebrew language. This is a pictograph, I think it's called. Okay, and pictographs have their own meanings, okay? But if you look here at Ayin, there are two eyes. It's kind of like, you know, you have an eye and you have an optic nerve that goes back and it looks like it goes back to your brain. Pretty representative. But the two eyes have different names. One is Ayin Tova, which means the good eye, and the other one is Ayin Ra, which means the bad eye. So what we're going to talk about is the ability to choose which eye we see from. You know, life can get really tough, you know. Deserts are guaranteed. It's part of the learning process. And you can't always choose what happens to you in life, But almost always, you can choose how you see it, how you interpret it, how you frame it. The thing about the two eyes is actually represents two choices, like I talked about, the good eye and the bad eye. Matthew 6 talks about the good eye, and I talked about that, ayin tova, the bad eye, ayin ra. And ayin tova is to understand with your heart and obey, just like God. That what you see is the best in people, the best in life. It's a generous spirit. It's being filled with compassion and investing in other people. Ayin Ra, on the other hand, is the bad eye. The bad eye is a slave to sin, a slave to impulses. Because of that, it's not very trusting with life, with people. Because of that, it tends to be self-serving, stingy, envious, jealous, being quick to recognize the faults in other people, and only investing in themselves. Probably the best example of the Bible is the example of the lost sons, Luke 15. Yeah, in Luke 15, there's a lot of things that get lost. Anyway, the father has two sons, and both of them see, the two groups, both of them see what they want to see. The sons, who have the bad eye, they could only see what they weren't receiving, how they were being left out. They became self-seeking, not trusting, and envying another way of life. The father had the good eye. He had a generous view of both sons. He chose to see only the good in them. He was quick to reassure his love for each of them. And that's how God is with us. Choosing to see life through the lens of a generous and loving God every day can have a major impact on our lives and in the world around us. Despite our circumstances, there are good things that happen every single day. But we have to train ourselves to look for them. You know, they're out there. Instead of thinking what you don't have, thinking of everything you do have. A house, a car, food, friends. You know, people who know you well and are willing to just sit there and hold your arms up. And we've all had times like that where if we didn't have the love of our friends, we'd be in the gutter. And every good thing we find reinforces that God is with us presently in that moment. And the next good thing you think about in that moment, and an hour later in that moment, and an hour later in that moment. It's a discipline that can bring joy every day to you, despite most circumstances, and it brings joy to other people because we get to shine the light of God on them. Yep. I think for me, this finally helped me understand Philippians 4. Because to me, Philippians 4 was always a goal, a theory. But it says in verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near, so don't be anxious about anything. But in everything, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God that transcends all understanding will guard your hearts and your mind in Christ Jesus. And I think it's that training of seeing everything we do have, focusing your eyes on how rich we are as a community instead of our present-day circumstances in times that aren't as pleasant. It carries us through like it talks about here in Philippians 4. So let's go to God in prayer.